Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
With marijuana now more available in Massachusetts, when is someone too impaired to drive? That's the question now before state lawmakers. Governor Charlie Baker supports a plan where if someone is suspected of being too high to drive and then refuses to take a chemical test, that person would lose their license for at least 6 months. And that's the same penalty for suspected drunk drivers who refuse a breathalyzer. The plan is from the State Special Commission on Operating Under the Influence and Impaired Driving, and two members of that commission are with us. John Carmichael, police chief in Walpole. Welcome to Radio Boston, Chief.
How you doing? Thank you very much for having me.
Okay. Also with us in studio is criminal defense attorney Peter Ellicott. Hi, Peter.
Terrific to be here.
So, Chief, let's start with you. What do you think is the biggest thing that this proposal would change?
All of it. I think it's all very important. The 19 recommendations that were made by the OUI Commission, I think, are all very important and unique in of themselves. And I think that the governor and the lieutenant governor took these recommendations to heart and didn't waste any time in forwarding that through to get it into legislation. You asked me, like, which ones I think are the most important.
No, I'm wondering right now in a typical traffic stop, if there is if an officer thinks that someone may be impaired because of marijuana, what do they do and what would this change?
Yeah, sure. Well, the first thing is that the officers are obligated to remove them from the roadway, right? If they suspect anybody is impaired by any substance, then they're obligated to make sure that they don't let that person continue to drive. And typically what they're looking at is the initial observation of a motor vehicle infraction. They didn't stop for a stop sign, or there's a marked lanes violation, or whatever it might be. They affect that motor vehicle stop, and then, you know, they make observations from that point on, right from the time they walk up to the vehicle, make contact with the operator. And those observations are relative to that person's behavior, their attitude, the demeanor, their attentiveness. A lot of, whatever their signs they're exhibiting to the officer at that time, the officer is taking note of that and then at some point would establish that that person may or may not be impaired.
But basically what you're saying here is it's the officer's observation.
Yes. The officer's observations are the initial things of importance, yes.
But under this plan, there would be a chemical test here. So where someone, if they didn't take that chemical test, could lose their driver's license for 6 months.
Correct. And the chemical test will be secondary to what the officer is seeing out on the street. That's, example, the oral fluid test. The officers are taking that information after they've already established probable cause to believe that person's impaired, and then they apply any type of, chemical testing that we may adopt, and the goal of that being a confirmation that that person is under the influence of whatever type of substances they have in their system.
Mm-hmm. But at this point, is there a reliable chemical test?
I think so, yeah. We looked at multiple types of specific devices that were out there currently, some that are used by other states. We looked at the sensitivity and the specificity of each of these types of devices. They're not perfect, but they do, I think, give us enough to basically confirm what the officer's observations were out on the street. These devices, contrary to what I hear a lot of, don't say that this is impairment. They are telling us that this person has an active drug or substance in their system, and which could be linked to the impairment that the officer is observing.
Mm-hmm. Of course, that raises all kinds of questions. But first, I want to make sure we get Peter Ellicott in here. Peter, your thoughts. You were part of this commission. What do you think should be taken from this report, and do you support this particular proposal?
I support a great deal of it. We were actually in lockstep, the commission, with all kinds of civil liberties groups, defense attorneys, law enforcement people. We were in agreement, first of all, on two things. One is that we really found out that you can't drive as well under the influence of marijuana. And a lot of people said, no, I can focus and concentrate. I actually drive better on marijuana. Every single study said that's just not true. Hmm. The other thing is there was a concern that every state that has legalized marijuana so far has seen the number of accidents go up. So what our commission was tasked with, and again, it's not a question of do we like marijuana or not, should it be legal or not, that's not the issue. The question is there going to be a question with people impaired by it? In the same way that a lot of us may have no problem with legalizing, with the fact that alcohol is legal, we still don't want people drunk driving. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we were tasked with. And we do not have a perfect answer for it at this time. We put together some better guidelines and more stringent requirements, but it's not perfect because at this point we don't have the equivalent of an alcohol breathalyzer where you blow in and you have that 0.08. Mm. We think that there's going to be something like that for marijuana within the next 3 to 5 years. At that point, it will be a lot better. At this point, though, without that, the old expression, well, perfect is the enemy of good. We don't have anything perfect. So we tried to tighten up the law enforcement tools as best we could.
Hmm. So I guess, Chief, my question to you is, okay, we're not saying that this is necessarily impairment, but we found the substances in the system. And, of course, here in Massachusetts, we have the 2017 Supreme Judicial Court ruling that said field sobriety tests are not conclusive evidence of marijuana intoxication. So you've got that legal threshold that might be complicating things as well. And also, with marijuana, stays in your system for a long time, and people might be taking it medically, and just because it's there doesn't mean you're impaired, right? So how do you deal with those questions? I know there's a lot of them, but let's first talk about the issue of impairment.
Yep, sure. So the Gerhardt case did establish that. They said that basically the lay police officer couldn't, you know, determine that a person's the results of a field sobriety test could be testified to in court, and that the officer could establish impairment by simply applying those standard field sobriety tests. A more recent case just came out by the SJC, the Davis case, where they took into consideration all the things that I mentioned previously, that, you know, marijuana does cause lack of concentration and problems with divided attention and, you know, that behavior, attitude, demeanor, observations that the officer made. So those are all very important, and those all came into play supporting the fact that the police officer was able to establish impairment just based on those observations alone. So when you look at standard field sobriety testing, or now which we call them roadside assessments, we did look at, in the commission, horizontal gaze nystagmus. We looked at different types of field sobriety testing or roadside assessments that can be applied. And I think that going forward, the research will still have to dictate which direction we go. But I certainly found that, you know, when doing certain tests, for example, the finger-to-nose test, you know, three cues of missing the finger on the nose, modified Romberg, where the officers are looking at eyelid and extremity tremors, one leg stand, walk and turn, those tests I think can still be valid and be able to show that there could be impairment, you know, based on adding in a couple of other assessments in that. And then the other thing is we have drug recognition experts, and drug recognition experts can put people through a 12-step process as well to determine impairment.
Well, can I bring something up here? Because we spoke with the ACLU about this last week, Matt Allen with the ACLU of Massachusetts. We asked him about some of these drug recognition exams that we now have. We have a little clip of that interview. Let's listen.
Law enforcement agencies have been using a drug recognition examination that has never been scientifically validated. So, you know, it's unfortunate that studies with sound methodologies to validate this exam have never been completed.
So, Chief, what do you say to that?
Well, I think that, you know, there is still more research that needs to be done on it. However, this test has been used for many years, the drug recognition expert assessments. And while those studies that were done quite some time ago, maybe we need to kind of update those studies more, you know, modernly and deal with it that way. But it's what we have. I mean,
right.
This is the drug recognition experts are what we have, and they, in many states, drug recognition experts just get up there and testify to their observations. And that was another thing that we actually got in the recommendations that we will, you know, that officers would have the ability to do that.
Hmm. Peter, you represent people who are accused of driving under the influence. Well, I mean, what do you tell? Do you tell them, you know what, we don't really have tests right now? I mean, is it like blanket fight regardless? Because
historically, it has been much easier to get people off on and operating under the influence of any kind of drug or marijuana. Because as we said, as I said earlier, we don't have the equivalent of a breathalyzer, a 0.08. So in the past, when I'm representing somebody charged with operating under the influence of drugs or marijuana, very often we can just get the case dismissed. They really don't have any way to prove it. Those are very beatable cases. So I think that was the concern, that with the legalization of marijuana, we may have many more cases like this. And, you know, the concerning public safety, is the public going to be further endangered? And again, as we keep saying, there's no perfect result until we get that equivalent of the breathalyzer, which for marijuana, which is 3 to 5 years away. There are things they can do to firm up, and that is what I would say would be more drug recognition experts, better testing and better sort of guidelines for the police, better training. There's a bunch of things. And even then, it's going to fall short, and it's not going to be that perfect answer that we're searching for. So I think this commission came up with a lot of improvements. But if you say, okay, is that it? Is that settled? Is that the best we can do? And I'd say no, still 3 to 5 years off probably.
I want to bring someone else into the conversation here, Ann Kitch. She tracks the marijuana and driving issue for the National Conference of State Legislatures. She's joining us from Colorado. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Deborah. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being with us. I'm wondering if you can tell us if we don't necessarily have a perfect system right now. I mean, what advice do you give states in terms of how to deal with this issue?
Yeah. So, and as Peter mentioned, the system is not perfect. There is no definitive research that shows which law is most effective, and so currently we're seeing states such as Massachusetts and Colorado really dig into that state-level data and the citation data to kind of determine, you know, what methods we can use to determine if a person is impaired by marijuana usage. And so I'd say that the states that are really analyzing this issue are definitely producing some of our most current and potentially accurate evidence, but that as of now, I'd say has been probably just the law that's been at the forefront.
You know, Peter, you mentioned something, and I've heard different things about this. You said every state that's legalized marijuana has seen an increase in highway-related incidents of people driving under the influence. Is that right?
Yeah, those are the initial studies, and I don't know how perfect every one of the studies is, but they seem pretty much in lockstep, I thought. I hadn't heard of anything.
So can we ask Ann about that? Ann, is the data showing that?
So as of now, there is no definitive data that is showing that. But I think over the next couple of years, it will be interesting to see if we do identify or uncover such data. So, I'd say over the next hopefully year or two, we'll know a little bit more about that landscape.
So I wonder, if we don't have a perfect test, as we're saying right now, and we're estimating, Peter says, 3 to 5 years it's out before we have a test that might be sort of a marijuana breathalyzer, if you will. Is blood test typically what is done to confirm the presence of a substance in most states, Ann?
So currently, the most common methods are through blood, urine, or saliva. If a person refuses to submit a chemical test, then there is the next option to receive a warrant for the blood test. But that varies state by state.
Okay. So at this point, in terms of looking at this from a national perspective, are you looking at ways to make sure that states would have a uniform way of testing and agreeing upon what constitutes impairment?
So we're not currently looking at that. We're digging into what states are doing, such as these roadside saliva pilot tests and things like that, and what sanctions states are imposing if those tests are refused.
And is anyone doing something similar to Massachusetts? I read in Michigan there's zero tolerance for any cannabis in the system at all.
Yes, that's a great question. Massachusetts, along with 31 other states and D.C. actually all have that similar driving under the influence of drugs law. and that a person is prohibited from driving under the influence or affected by THC. And then you have other states who have enacted per se laws that have established a legal THC limit. And then you have a handful of states that have enacted zero tolerance laws that prohibit any amount of THC in a person's body while they're driving.
Even if it's medically prescribed?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder, and what about agreement on drug recognition officers who might testify? Is there uniform agreement about how these officers might be trained and then utilized to testify in driving under the influence cases?
So as far as I know, and just speaking with enforcement officers who have been through those DRE trainings, as Chief Carmichael and Peter both mentioned, it is best left up to the enforcement officer's judgment and the training. They rely on the training that they received in those DRE courses.
Okay, Ann. Well, Ann Kitch tracks marijuana and driving for the National Conference of State Legislatures. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, I'd like to have both Peter and Chief Carmichael weigh in now in terms of what are the outstanding concerns that you still have and you think need to be dealt with by the legislature. Peter, you first.
As I said, though, we have this outstanding concern that we don't have a perfect answer. We don't have, you can detect marijuana in a person's system, but marijuana lasts for 30 days, and it's one of the longer-lasting drugs. And so when you test somebody, can you really say they're impaired, or were they, did they smoke marijuana 3 weeks ago before they were driving? So I keep saying we do not have the perfect answer, and I think until the science catches up, at that point, we'll have a perfect answer. Right now, all we can do is make the system better and make enforcement a little more accurate, but we're not quite there yet. And everybody's doing the very best that they can with the state of the art, but the science is not there yet. It will be there soon.
Mm-hmm. And Chief, how about you? Do you think that we will soon start to see that folks, if they do refuse a chemical test when they're pulled over for driving under the influence of marijuana, that they will lose their license for 6 months?
Yeah, they would. And again, that's a non-criminal administrative issue with the Registry of Motor Vehicles, just like refusing to take a breath test. So that's, you know, having a driver's license is obviously a privilege. And if people that don't want to comply with the implied consent law would rightfully have to lose their driver's license. So, like, I guess in closing, you know, some of the, you know, we hear this catchphrase, treat marijuana like alcohol. And we've heard alcohol get mentioned several times during this conversation. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the things we need to do is move away from that. We need to treat marijuana like other drugs and not like alcohol, because we don't have a breathalyzer test for heroin. We don't have it for cocaine or oxycodone. We don't have it for polydrug use. All we have is what the officer's observations are out in the street, and then some confirmatory test afterwards that's going to show that this person had these types of drugs in their system at the time. We don't need to have the discussion about, you know, what if they have a drug in their system from 3 weeks ago, because somebody that has a drug in their system from 3 weeks ago is not going to be weaving all over the road. They won't have glassy bloodshot eyes. They won't have the odor of marijuana smoke coming out of the vehicle. Those observations won't be there. So that's just not really an issue. And the other thing is that when we do test for, even using oral fluid, we're testing for hydroxy-THC or active delta-9-THC, the active drug that would be in that system, which would not last in the typical person's body for even close to 3 weeks or a month. That's usually metabolized THC.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for active THC in proximity to the stop, based in addition to the other observations that are made, and giving the officer something to testify later to in court. You know, again, they're obligated to remove people from the roadway, and we want to make sure that they have the right tools to do that.
Okay, Walpole Police Chief John Carmichael, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Criminal defense attorney Peter Elikin, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
They're both members of the State Special Commission on Operating Under the Influence and Impaired Driving. Stay with us. Coming up, how friendship patterns affect the racial divide. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.
Wait, don't go yet. because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call. But give it a try. 617-917-4717.